I'd want to welcome all of you and thank you for taking the time to be with us today in this holiday season. And here are all your beautiful faces. We have an amazing team, and everyone's been doing amazing work this year. And so wanted to share those smiling faces with you. I also wanted to share with you where we are. We are all across the United States and into Canada. And I think having a visual of where we are kind of feels like it's bringing us together a little bit. So we have Ariana all the way up here in Nova Scotia. And, I'm going to have to look. I'm going to have to cheat. April in Pennsylvania. And then we have Chris. Oh, that Chris is missing. We have Chris in Michigan. We have Vicky in Ohio, Matt in Indiana. And then we have Carol and Katie in Denver. We have Barry in Nevada. And then there's three of us in California. And I did a little bit closer shot so you could see that I'm the very bottom here in Long Beach. And Sherry is in, used to be Rancho Palos Verdes, but near there. And then we've got Heather up here in Pasadena. So I thought it was kind of fun to see where we all were.
That's a great question.
Donna, one correction. I'm actually in Ohio as well, not Indiana.
Oh, why did I have Indiana? I apologize. Thanks for correcting
me. I'm only about an hour from the border, so.
Oh, okay. I think what I did was look up your zip code or something, and it misled me. But I'm so glad here, Matt. Welcome.
Thank you.
And I forgot to say the starting code because Chris isn't here to remind me. The starting code is 900. That's 900. And then our agenda today will be to celebrate 2017 accomplishments, the 2018 meeting schedule, 2018 projects, and then Carol's going to do an amazing presentation for us on coaching through grief. And I think we all as coaches, because we're coaching people, our clients end up having grief at some point. And I know it's something I've struggled to coach through. And so I wanted to share this with all of you. Then we'll do our closing the sale triad debrief. Hopefully all of you have gotten together and talked about closing the sale. And then we'll do a get to know you fun activity. And it sounds like someone else may have joined us. No? Okay. So I wanted to, and again, I'm going to not be able to know how to do what I want to try to do. Okay. that doesn't do it either. Okay. Well, I wanted to do a toast to all of you, and hopefully you have your cool mugs, and if not, you'll have something that you can bring up and toast with. And my mug, the Paris mug, I hope you can see, Celebration of Paris. I'd like to propose a toast to Glacier Point Solutions, Inc. team. We make a positive impact on our clients and on the world through them. We work hard, go the extra mile, offer resources, ideas, a sounding board. We work to be responsive, and we help our clients be happier, more successful, and able to contribute more in the world and in their work, and so that they are a greater positive force on the world. And what I greatly appreciate about all of you is that you devote your time and energy to working on yourselves to be better people and better coaches. And I want to thank all of you for that hard work and all the hard work through this year.
Thank you. Woohoo! Thank you.
Thanks, Donna.
Thank you. Thank you all very, very much from the bottom of my heart. It absolutely warms my heart when I get positive comments about the coaching that you're doing. it really, really touches me, and it just makes me feel like we're really making a difference in the world. And we don't just get comments about individual work. We get comments about the impact that it's having on the team or the company. And so that's really, really amazing. As far as individual accomplishments, I wanted to share that Katie B. Smith, I just think of her as Katie Smith, has finished her book, Be Happy Now, Claim the Life You Deserve. It's on Amazon. It was featured by RiseSmart, and she also got a beautiful beautiful new headshots. And I see that as an accomplishment because I know how much work it is to do a headshot. There's makeup, there's hair, getting in the right place, there's wearing the right clothes, there's being in the right energy. So hats off to that. But oh my gosh, birthing a book, that's amazing. So congratulations, Katie. Yay. We're really, really proud of you.
And, congratulations, Katie.
Thanks.
And we're tweeting you and we're linking you and we're doing everything we can to leverage that for you and for us. So we greatly appreciate it. Are there any other individual accomplishments that anyone would like to share? Anything else that's, I know this one's kind of hard to,
it's not so big. A competition.
It's big, but it's not a competition.
You made it through the year.
Yes. And for me, I worked less, and that was my accomplishment.
Yeah.
So. Yay. Yeah. So, and I also want to point out Katie's Zen cup here for her Zen approach to life and all of the information she knows about that. I wanted to share that our average rating this year was 4.54 out of 5. So that is amazing. 3.2 out of 5 would be satisfied. 4.2 would be greatly satisfied, and we're above that. So congratulations. For LBS, we're actually at 4.86, and for corporate, we're at 4.78. And in a way, that's more important because I sell those numbers to each company as a way to have them know that we're making a difference and that people are happy with what we're doing. So I also wanted to share some of the comments I've gotten on you guys this year. Chris is a great listener. She pays attention to the details and reminds me of ways to help me realize and connect the dots. She's amazing. And by the way, there's sometimes less comments on one person, and all of you do different amounts of clients with us, so the quantity doesn't reflect anything. Vicki has guided, mentored, and offered solutions with specific problems and decisions I've had to make. She's been very sensitive to my personality, and this has allowed me to be open with any issue I may have. She has been awesome. So that's another great one. Ariana is supportive, insightful, thought-provoking. She's a great listener and advisor, and our sessions have helped me continue to strive to build a better team. And again, you can see the ripple effect going not just from that person, but to their team and then to the company. Carol gives sage advice, and she has a very short sentence there, but it's very heavy hitting, and it's from somebody who doesn't say much. So when you get somebody that doesn't say much and they say something that powerful, that really means something. Sherry does a great job of helping me to keep focused on what is important when things get chaotic. She also gives me great tips and articles, and I love that because I want us to be resources and give information as well. Katie is direct and challenging in a good way. Love this. I love challenging. She keeps me motivated and is effective in promoting my thinking. And I hope all of us will be looking for that coaching edge that Katie seems to be having here. Heather is an organized and inspiring coach. She is able to provide positive feedback and balance instructional feedback in order to modify and improve behaviors and outcomes. Thank you for your energy, enthusiasm, and inspiration. And I love that energy. We have the Twitter handle Lead to Energize. And I believe that's something that we all need to be doing for our clients. Matt makes me feel comfortable, focuses on my strengths and listens. He's helped me develop action plans through difficult situations. So wonderful comments about all of you. That's our clients opening up their hearts, taking their time to acknowledge the hard work that you're doing with them. So thank you so much. I want to go over to the website, and I do want to show everyone that we do have our meeting schedule on the Glacier Point Solutions website. So this is our meeting schedule for the year. I am throwing in some leadership practicums. We've been doing career practicums, but there's a great deal of leadership tools on the Donna Schilder website and tools that we can share with each other and tips. And so we're going to have some leadership coaching practicums. And those of you that do leadership coaching, which is almost all of you, I would love to see you do your best to attend. If you cannot attend, then you can listen to them afterwards. And just make sure you send me that email letting me know that you watched it and what you got out of it and what the two codes are. So I wanted to make sure you all knew that we did have that. And we will go back to our presentation here. We're continuing to add information to DonnaSchilder.com, especially leadership tools. So if you haven't been there in a while, I would suggest getting there and taking a look at what's there. We're using DocuSign for more documents now, which is much more efficient than paper and scanning and all of that. I personally implemented Todoist, and I'm finding that to be a really good to-do list tool. So I wanted to let you guys know that in case you needed one. I've tried to implement to-do list tools over and over and over again for the last 15 years, and I'm finally doing it. So I think there's something special about this one. We are implementing Zoom video conferencing and learning as we go, and we'll get better and better at that. And if you want to use that for an individual client or a group client, I believe we can share this account for now. Eventually, I probably will need to get a broader one that has multiple licenses. You're really not supposed to use each other's licenses, but we're just kind of getting started here at this point. And we are implementing Google Forms for surveys. You'll be getting a little video from April on that. And I know that some of you are finding it tedious to send the surveys out. So I'm going to do a intermediate step with that, which is we will send it from my email first. If we do not get a response within a week, we'll ask you to send it, and that way less of them will come to you. But what we're finding is when you send them, we get greater response rate than if I send them from my email, and that makes sense because you have a personal relationship with them. But at least we'll try to cut that down. But keep us informed if it's still feeling overwhelming. We also reduce the frequency a bit. We'll have a 3-month survey, and then it'll go to every 6 months. So that should also reduce the amount. But we did have an increase when you guys started sending them. As far as projects coming up, South Coast Water District, I didn't think we'd get any more clients from them, and we got one more. So I guess we're still in relationship with them. We're still doing 9 clients at LDS, and we're starting to move down into the second tier leadership. So that's great. With our aerospace company, we've added a couple more, and so we're coaching the CEO and 5 leaders, and it's been offered to all of the top leaders, so we will probably get more of them coming in. And Sherry Cannon, as a strategic partner rather than through Glacier Point Solutions, performed a leadership offsite for them in November that was very well received. And it's working better for me to have strategic partnerships on training than to have them under Glacier Point. It was a point of great stress for me, and now it's working much better. So the manufacturing company that seemed so like I was about to sell them now pushed it off to March. We are going to have another meeting in March. They're implementing a software. We know what that's like. So we understand, but hopefully that's going to be a 7-client thing that we'll keep rotating through. They're all across the United States. I'm meeting with an apparel company to be an executive coaching provider for them next week, and that looks pretty good for several clients. Janine Labardi, who you may or may not know, I think Heather might know her, is doing you're linked to her on LinkedIn. So who knows why? I know, same thing with me, right? But she's doing a strategic planning session with them next week. And again, in a strategic alliance with us rather than under the company. And so hopefully that's bringing in. We're a little bit lower, but we still had 4 new individually paying clients come in fourth quarter. And that is lower, but I think there's an SEO issue, which I am working. I've already seen an improvement since I've done some work. I'm going to be doing some work and more to come. So I believe that'll come up. So I think we have more corporate and a little bit less individual, but that's going to ebb and flow. So that's not a surprise. And so that's kind of our projects coming up. It seems like there was... Oh, I know what it was. So next we're going to talk about grief. And
Donna,
can I
ask a quick question?
Sure.
This is Matt. I'm just curious. You talked about that with that manufacturing company, 7 clients are rotating. What do you mean by the rotating?
What I mean is that they will engage us for a year for a client. And then when that client's done, they'll put another client in and that it'll be a continuous relationship where we'll always have 7 to 10 clients in there.
Oh, okay. So 7 to 10 clients for that year and then a new batch of 7 to 10 clients. Great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's, thanks for asking that. That didn't really make sense. yeah. But the idea is that it's an ongoing relationship and that they will budget for 7 to 10 clients and they'll just do that every year and keep running people through. They'll start with new leaders, they'll do some high potentials, and then they'll just start running all their leaders through. And it's a quite large company. So
that's awesome. Great.
Yeah. So
okay.
Yep. Thanks for asking that. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Comments? Okay. With regard to grief, I did want to let you know that there are some resources on our website under the Life Improvement. So this is the Donna Schilder website. And if you click on Life Improvement, you will come to an area of Life Improvement. And Life Improvement is really happiness. It's all resources about happiness and things that we should be using with all our clients, because any client, even if you're working on leadership, you should also be supporting them with increasing gratitude, increasing pleasure, reducing stress, all those kinds of things. So we do have some grief and loss survival resources here. I have 2 books that I have given to multiple people over the years and used myself in grief, and they have been so helpful. I have a widow's checklist that I created actually for a friend, but decided to put it up here. And then I thought this was interesting that I just added, which was over 40 life experiences that could cause grief. And so sometimes we just think of it as a loss of a friend, but it can be the loss of many, many, many things. It could even be paying off a mortgage. I saw a friend go through a little bit of grief on that just because it was a change. With the fires in California, we're going to experience a lot of people who've lost their homes. During the recession, I saw a lot of people lose their businesses. So grief touches us in many different ways. So I wanted to bring that as a starter here. And then I'd like to throw it over to Carol Billingham, MCC, who we are so happy to have with us, who's been coaching for many, many years, and who is also taking a master's in counseling right now. And so she's got some extra special information about coaching clients through their grief. Carol, are you ready? Oh, wait, let me do one more thing. I was going to do a poll.
Sure.
Actually, did I launch the poll already? And you guys, Okay. So let's just say the poll is that have you coached around grief? 33% have, 67% haven't. Do you feel you were successful somewhat? And no. So maybe not as many of you are encountering grief as I might have thought, but you will through the course of your work encounter it. And, you know, you can have a leader and they just become frozen in grief, and that's where you have to work with them until they can move forward through it. So, Carol, sorry about that. I just wanted to
use my new
tool here. So here we go. So I'm going to close the poll, and Carol, take us over.
Great, thank you. So first of all, I am not on the screen, or I didn't log in, so I do not have access to see if you guys put something up on the screen or a question or whatever. So just so you know, I did that for two reasons. First of all, I like to walk around when I'm presenting, for one thing, and two, I have a brain injury, and multitasking can be hard for me. So I wanted to be able to be fully present with you, and I knew that if I zoomed in visually, it would be difficult. But I'm tickled and honored to be presenting today on grief for a couple of reasons, and I'd like to give you just a little bit of background of my story and why I'm beginning to think that grief might be a specialty for me, both as a coach and as a future therapist. Yes, I'm in graduate school. I've been a coach for almost 22 years, and 2 years ago decided that I wanted to go to grad school because I wanted to deepen my work, both as a coach and to possibly do counseling with clients as well. And this semester, which is almost done, I took a grief counseling and life transitions class with my mentor, who is a grief counselor and has written a book on grief, and found that the class material was just so resonating with me, so much so that I gave a 90-minute presentation in my human growth and development class on grief and different development stages within humans. And we just wrapped up our grief class on Saturday, and sadly and ironically, our professor who was teaching the class had to turn it over to two other professors to finish because her 35-year-old son died suddenly back in October. So it was interesting me taking this class and actively grieving in the midst of the class for our beloved teacher and her loss. And so when Donna asked me to speak about this, I thought that I would take some of the information from my 90-minute presentation and try to distill it down into something impactful for us as coaches. And I'm really clear that I would much rather this be a discussion than a presentation or a lecture. So I'm hoping that I can kind of throw some information out to you, and then we can talk about what it is to hold space for clients that are grieving. Another thought I had based on your response to the questionnaire that Donna just sent you is that for those of you that thought you weren't coaching through grief, I would be willing to bet that you were and you just didn't know it, because grief is so very, very common and shows up in so many different ways. And I'll share some things with you, I think, that will inform that statement that I just made. But so my intentions are to share some things with you that I've learned that might help you to become more effective coaches when you find yourself or your clients in the midst of grieving. I also hope that you will see the importance of tending to your own unresolved grief and the positive effects that doing so can have for you, for your clients, and I believe for the healing of our American culture. So a little bit of background of why grief is so important to me. I'm adopted, and my life started with loss, and not a death loss, but what we call a life loss. And I look forward to seeing going to that link that Donna put up about the 40 things that are grief that might not be thought about as grief. And my experience with being relinquished from my birth mother at birth just set me off to be grieving and not be met in that grief. And what made it really uncomfortable was that when I did try to ask questions, I was met with shame and discomfort from the part of my family members and other people that would tell me, well, you're a chosen child, you should be happy, sugarcoating the fact that I had experienced a very great loss. And this dishonoring of that loss set me up for many, many years of pain, including subsequent losses. I went through a couple of divorces, a miscarriage, and every time I would suffer a loss, that primal wound of my original loss would come up. And it also kept me from being able to experience emotional intimacy with people, which I believe is what we all crave at our core, is a sense of connection. And like many people, I coped using alcohol, work, things to keep me busy. And it wasn't until I had a brain injury 20 years ago that I was able to understand the depth of my grief and to start to integrate that loss, the losses that started at my birth. And today, here I am at graduate school. My sense is I'm going to be working a lot with grief. I'm also in a significant relationship with Steve, who's a widower, who understands the importance of conscious grieving as his wife died of breast cancer, and holding space for two young girls in their teens that have suffered loss. And I'm also experiencing what we call anticipatory grief, when we know that there's something around the bend. We may not be thinking about it consciously, but unconsciously grief comes to the surface. As I look at my teenage daughter getting ready to go off to college, and also watching my aging parents and recognizing that they're not going to be here forever. And so being able to be conscious of that allows me to journal about it, talk about it, and really be conscious in that area of my life. So what does this have to do with you? You as coaches come into contact with clients probably more often than you know that are experiencing loss. And you too will experience loss. And so I'm hoping that today, in sharing my background with you, there may be some things there that resonate for you or with you and that help you to be better coaches. So why don't we start with what grief means? When you hear the word grief, what comes to mind?
Loss.
Loss.
Mm-hmm. I say loss too.
Emotional hurt.
Yes, emotional. It's a feeling thing, is a thinking thing, isn't it?
Sadness.
Yeah. Sadness. Yeah.
Transformation.
Transformation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a positive side, and we'll talk a little bit about that. There is a positive aspect that conscious grieving can lead to what they call post-traumatic growth, that it can actually strengthen one's identity and belief in the world, which is not generally what we think of when we think of grief. So here's a definition from my textbook. It says, grief can be broadly defined as the distress that occurs when an individual's existing assumptive world is lost because of a significant life-changing event. Grief is both adaptive and necessary as it helps us to rebuild our assumptive world after destruction. And assumptive world is simply the beliefs and the assumptions that we have about the world that we live in. And so most of the time when we think of grief, we think of death loss. We think of you know, a human being that's died or a pet that's died. But for me, the majority of the losses that I've experienced in my life have been life losses in comparison to death loss. And life loss can be just as significant, maybe even more so, because it goes unidentified and unrecognized. And so recognizing that life loss is very, very important. So some of the life losses that we might come into contact with as coaches, especially in business coaching, is a loss of job, economic loss. Donna touched on some of these. Relationship breakups, including divorce, extramarital affairs. That's one of the tricky ones that often doesn't get talked about. Natural disasters, which we are seeing all over the place, right? Loss of a business, loss of a friendship, decline in someone's health. Loss of dreams, caretaking for an ill family member, or losing a job and losing those dreams of promotion or what we thought might have happened in our future with that organization. Other ones, miscarriage, abortion, childhood and adult trauma, serious injuries and accidents, chronic illness, immigration, acquired disabilities, being a victim of a crime, abuse, any other losses that you can think of that I haven't listed?
The child in divorce. I guess you did mention
that. Well, no, yeah, we didn't talk about that. Yeah, yeah. Or even as an adult, having something trigger the fact that your parents went through a divorce and you never really grieved the fact that you lost out on this, this, and this. And we'll talk a little bit about how that happens, how quite often when we're experiencing something in present time, if there's unresolved grief from the past, it will present itself, whether it's consciously or unconsciously. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
There is also grief when a parent or a sibling or whatever has dementia, because you're losing them slowly instead of, you know, with them dying.
Yes. And you're watching the other family members that you care about observe that. Yeah, that is what they call complicated grief, that it affects more than just you.
And
your role in... Go ahead.
Sorry. The person themselves that is getting dementia grieves, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And it's a process that things change. And you mentioned something about, you know, change triggers grief. As humans, we tend to not particularly care for change. And if we're not conscious of that, we dig our heels in and it just gets harder. And something like dementia or cancer there's a lot of realms where it's complicated. And then the roles within our family present themselves. If we've always been the responsible one, that's my role, we tend to default to that. And the rest of the family will default to that and expect us to be the responsible one. When in turn, we may need extra support at that time rather than falling fully into that role of being the responsible one, because we're grieving too. And so, you know, I think if there's one thing I want you all to take away today is this awareness that grief is all around us. And we can go around unconscious with it and not really be able to experience the joy of living fully, or we can start to recognize that we marinate in grief all the time. And the other loss I want to share, too, is that there can be positive loss. As you said, Donna, that you had a friend that paid off her mortgage, which is everyone's dream, yet it is a change. And who knows what that might be tied to. It could be that, you know, I'm just going to make stuff up. Your friends, you know, watched somebody she knew lose her house one time and never really thought about that or processed that. And that, you know, it's circling back around in the fact that she's privileged enough to pay off her house. Or there might be guilt for being able to do that when she looks around and sees poverty and despair in other places in the world. Who knows? And it's not our job to know that, but just to recognize that we are multidimensional in our humanness, and loss can trigger all kinds of things.
Hey, Carol,
Carol, can I go ahead?
Of course. Just to tag on to that last comment you just made, I do have a client who just paid off their house, and I'm so totally jealous of him. I bring that kind of grief on, but just very briefly. So he and his wife are—they're not even 40 years old, which makes me all the even more jealous that they paid off their house. But they're now faced with or looking through, like, okay, so now, you know, what is it I do want to do with my life? And now that I don't have this burden, you know, so he's doing some purposeful self-reflection work, which is interesting to work with him. I also add another kind of grief I don't think we touched on, and that is worldwide grief or community grief.
Yes.
You know, the shooting in Las Vegas. You turn on the news any given day, the bombing in whatever name of country, including our own.
Right.
You know, so there's that grief of communities and people that we don't even know, but it affects ourselves and affects, for me, it's not the world that I see myself living in, and yet it is the world I live in.
Yes. Well, and that's exactly perfect segue. Thank you. Because that's what I was going to talk about next. But I want to go back to your statement about your client or friend that paid off their mortgage. Mm-hmm. And here they are with space, a shift in where they've been focusing and a sense of pride and accomplishment that they got to pay off that mortgage. But now they've got this space. What do we do with it? And in our culture, we're not comfortable with that. We want to fill the space. We want to fill it with noise. We want to fill it with stuff. We want to fill it with texting or tweeting or you fill in the blanks. And as a healer, I think that that's something that is helpful to look at. I'd love our culture to look at that. That what are we filling up our space with? And better yet, how can we be comfortable with spaciousness mm-hmm. and not being busy? And so let's segue into grief in America. So my professor wrote a book called The Alchemy of Grief, Dr. Anna Fidel Rice. And the first chapter of the book is all about how America handles, or I should actually say doesn't handle grief. And oh my God, do I get excited about this. Excited in a really kind of pissed off way, but also in, I want to get on the rooftops and shout out that we've got some work to do. And the optimist in me sees an incredible opportunity if we can understand how our culture is uncomfortable with grief, and which explains why I was, you know, shamed for bringing up something that made people uncomfortable. And even with my brain injury, I've experienced that. I process slower. I move at a slower pace. And I do that because I want to, and because one time I had to. And I watch people as they're uncomfortable, as I take my time, as I take out my credit card to pay the bill at the grocery store. Or, you know, I'm slower in things, and I observe as people get kind of pissed off at me for being slow. And so I wanted to cover this because I think it's our responsibility as coaches to be aware and to understand our culture's stance on grief and to use that awareness to better understand our own relationship with grief so that we can in turn help others. At this moment, this topic is so timely as America is a country in shock and experiencing grief. When I did my presentations, it was about hurricanes. Well, now we've got wildfires. We had mass shootings. And now, you know, the sexual misconduct and abuse that's happening in our culture, politics. I mean, we don't have to look very far to see that we are a culture trying to process an awful lot of information and emotion. America is masculine. It's patriarchal. We value action, thinking, logic, and productivity, while grief is feminine. Grief is feeling oriented. It's not linear or logical. It's circular, and it's about process, not action. There is so much violence and death in our television, newspapers, and media that we've become numb to death and dying. The media show little emotional response to violence and death, thus normalizing disconnection and numbness. We celebrate youth and despise aging and death. Death is denied. Margaret Mead said, "When a person is born, we rejoice. When they're married, we celebrate. When they die, we pretend nothing happened. We cannot control grief. This makes us uncomfortable. Under the surface, it reminds us that there is very little in life that we can control, and that creates even more discomfort. Therefore, we fear grief. Grief makes us feel vulnerable. Vulnerability is seen as our culture is weakness." Here's a quote. "Death and grief signify vulnerability, which is a sign of weakness. In a social system based on competition and acquisition, weakness is intolerable, so grief goes underground. As a society, we're task-oriented. Processing grief is not productive, therefore it's not valued. And America denies grief, has a negative projection on grief, and shames people when they show emotion and grief. And as Americans," so this is something I had this awareness as I was getting ready to give my presentation a couple months ago, "that as Americans, we have not owned up to or honored the grief of Native Americans or African Americans or any other minorities, including women, that have been oppressed and abused in our culture. And that sadness, rage, and disenfranchised grief lives within our psyche. Corporations dictate how long we're allowed to grieve in their policies for bereavement. My partner, Steve, lost his wife, was given 3 weeks off, went back to work, and was basically told, you know, you should be over it by now. Get to work. And, you know, the shock had barely, I think he was probably still in shock at that point. We lack rituals for grief, and we won't get into this, but, you know, in other cultures, like I have a friend from Iran, they spend 40 days wearing black, and when they go out into the market or to the store, people know that they're grieving, and they honor the fact that, that people are grieving and or sitting Shiva in the Jewish faith. I mean, there were rituals in Christianity in our culture that we don't have anymore. We also tend to live away from our families. So we may come together for a funeral, but our families go home and we are left to grieve alone. And so here's one last quote. Because most people internalize the social norms of the society in which they identify, the pressure is often felt within the client, even though the issue is rooted in socially mediated values and expectations. We're left feeling ashamed when we express emotions and think that there's something wrong with us instead of understanding that the dysfunction lies within our culture. So this is all the bad, yucky, negative news. So what happens because of that? We become disenfranchised with our grief, grief that's not recognized within the people in our society and within ourselves. And instead of honoring that and healing it, although healing really isn't the right word, I learned that when it comes to grief, it's really that we don't get over the grief, it's that we integrate the grief. There's a big distinction there. But that grief goes underground and it festers and it comes out in unattractive ways like violence. Addiction, which is a big one. That's another one I want to shout off the rooftops. We are immersed in addictive behavior and often don't talk about that. And then a greater sense of isolation, which again goes back to addiction and violence and some of the other things. So I've covered a lot of stuff here. What's going off in your mind? Where does this resonate? Where have you seen this or where have you experienced this in your own life?
I think this is a great topic, Carol, and I'm so glad you're talking about it. I'm really grateful to be here and learn from your wisdom. It's funny, I was on a coaching call on Friday, and the woman had just signed up with me, and she said, so many people are having death in their life, tragedy, sickness, in her circle, right? And she said, and my life is going amazing. I mean, since I signed up for coaching, the universe is conspiring to work with me. And she said, and I feel guilty because they're having a shit time and I'm like on cloud nine. Uh-huh. So it was a great dialogue about what the guilt's teaching her and how to hold space.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and I heard once that, you know, we can't get sick in order to help the people that are sick when we're well, right? That there's this consciousness that somehow it's wrong for us to be thriving when people are hurting. And in our, with the media the way it is, where we've got media in our pockets through our phones, you know, that sense of guilt is very common and recognized, and it doesn't help anybody to disown what's going on in your life that's good, and to recognize that's a gift that you can give to people to be a lifeline. You know?
Well,
you
get a gift back in holding space.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
It's like it deepens our own compassion for ourselves and the other. Right.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yes.
Yeah. I felt a lot of survivor's guilt, having had ovarian cancer and knowing, you know, so many people die so quickly. And so that resonates for me, is that sense of sometimes having guilt around other people's grief.
Sure.
And yeah, I'd like to hear more.
Go ahead.
I'd like to hear more about integrating and how we help the client integrate.
Yes. So I want to read to you. I have a friend who is a coach who just lost her brother to cancer. And I asked her, you know, I'm giving this presentation. What would you say as a coach to coaches regarding grief? And she said, quote, "It's best to lean in rather than avoid the subject. It's amazing to me and sad how many people just shy away from the topic because they don't know what to say. You can hardly say anything wrong. However, once acknowledged, this is important, it's time to listen, really listen. People chime in with their experiences and their loss, their own stories, but that's not useful at the time. The person grieving needs to be able to feel safe to just speak what's on their mind. No judgment, no being helpful, no trying to fix anything. Just be present and listen. And as you know, coming from a place of love is essential. So I think what Denny shares is really important. I think because of our discomfort, we want to fix it. We want to do something. And that's not going to, not only is that not going to help, that can actually hurt our clients. All they need is safe space to be witnessed and to just drop down and listen. And I would challenge you that if you find something going on in your body, to listen to that, take a minute and notice what's going on. Take it, you know, jot down something for you to look at after the call. If that's uncomfortable for you, there's an opportunity there for you to do some work on your own grief. And that, you know, ultimately the greatest gift we can give our clients is presence. And if we can't be present with ourselves, we are limited in how we can be present for our clients. And maybe that's part of the reason why I'm going to school as a counselor, because I've had coaches that have actually hurt me by not being present with me and me inadvertently getting the signals that there was something wrong with me. And I don't fault, I mean, I believe everything's perfect the way it unfolds, but I think we have to do our due diligence as coaches and make sure that we're doing our work, or we can actually hurt our clients and invalidate what they're going through. And so I know we've only got a couple minutes left, and I do have, you know, some worksheets here on things that we can do with clients you know, some tips and things, but I want to honor the fact that we only have, you know, 30 minutes set aside for this. So I think, like I said, the most important thing is that, you know, we have to be comfortable with being present and with silence, and to know that it's not our job to do something other than, you know, other than be, and that also that grief is normal. It's not an illness, an issue. It's part of life, and that it doesn't need to be fixed. It just needs to be witnessed. And of course, as coaches, understanding that if a client is truly stuck or if we feel uncomfortable, then it's time to refer them to counseling. But most people can get through grief without the need of a counselor. And that's something that I found interesting, because I had this misbelief in my head that, you know, one really needs to go in and dive into the emotions and whatever. But I think if we can just validate that grief is normal, there's nothing wrong with you for feeling, you know, some of the side effects of grief, like being spacey and having problems with memory, decision making, concentration, needing extra rest and sleep. Those are some of the side effects. And I didn't do PowerPoints, but I've got some tip sheets I'd be happy to get out to you.
Yeah.
And if you're okay with it, we'll put them up on the website. Well, we can talk about that later.
Yeah.
So I have a question, Carol. So when you say, you know, like you said, you don't have to dive into it. So is your counsel to, you know, just allow them to be intuitive and follow where the grief is leading them?
Yeah.
Because sometimes that can be years of sadness, right? I mean, it can be a long...
Layers. Yeah, it can be. I think that making sure that you talk about it, don't ignore the elephant in the room.
Right.
I had a client not that long ago whose aunt died, and she was very close to her aunt. And I specifically asked her, you know, how are you doing with your aunt's passing?
Yeah.
And I think that it's easy, and Danny mentions that, you know, that people they shy away from the topic.
Yeah.
And when you shy away, you invalidate what that person's feeling. And then they start to feel like there's something wrong with them.
Mm-hmm.
And we certainly don't want that for our clients.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I think what I've experienced is I'm naming that I'm just being with them.
Yes.
You know, I'm letting them know that the role I'm playing right now is I'm being here, I'm being present, I'm listening. And I found, you know, with profound grief, big, you know, a big situation, that it may be several sessions, it could be three or four sessions, that what I need to do is just be there, listen, give some love, support. And then at some point when I'm sensing that they're moving into a place of being stronger, then I ask, are you ready to start processing and integrating this? And sometimes the answer is no, and we stay in listening and speaking, or we you know, I say, oh, do you want to work on something else? But it's sort of that naming it. And then once they start moving into a place of integrating and processing, you know, finding small activities that relate to their learning style for them to do can be helpful, but some people are don't want to do that and mm-hmm. don't need it. And yeah. It's just offering it as an idea. And I think also sometimes we don't create ceremony around things that aren't a personal death. And sometimes we need that. And
yes.
I've even done yes. that with teams when a team member moves on, doing a ritual, creating a ritual. And that's helped a lot of my clients too, is to say, hey, let's have you design a ritual and follow yes. it out. So,
yes, ritual is very, very powerful. And it gives mm-hmm. them something, quote, to do. I think when someone's grieving, they vacillate between being immobilized and you know, doing some day-to-day activities, you know, making breakfast or,
yeah.
and so much of it's intuiting where your client is and, you know, trusting your instincts to tell you how to show up for them and not pepper them with questions. You know, the side yeah. effects of grief are very similar to the side effects of brain injury. And so you can really overwhelm your client if you're bombarding them. Think of it in terms of energy. What they're needing is to be met in grace. And if you're peppering them with questions, you're in your head and you're it's almost like these little bullets going at your client, you know, that are just going to overwhelm them and then make them feel bad, because generally people are embarrassed when they're emotional, which just makes me so sad. Because there's such a gift in just being real and being vulnerable. And we feel vulnerable when we're grieving because nothing makes sense anymore. Mm-hmm. And this applies to life loss as much as death loss. And so yeah. I guess, you know, I just want to shout from the rooftops, let's be conscious. Start with yourself. You know, do a timeline of the losses that you've experienced in your life. And is there one in particular that's calling you to create a ritual or do some journaling or whatever? It'll just make you happier and deepen your ability to be in presence and in love with your client. So yeah,
I think ritual puts reverence around it, you know?
Say that again?
I think ritual puts reverence around it.
Yes.
It creates reverence for your life and yes. where you are. And, you know, there's yes. a, you know, there's a, an honoring that happens when you do ritual.
Yes.
Deep.
It's primal.
Yeah.
With all of this, it's great conversation because people feel very isolated otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And by supporting them in this way, giving them the space, and knowing that we're there to hear, helps them feel more connected rather than disconnected.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And isn't that, my bias is that is what we crave more than anything, that everything we do in our life is to connect to each other, to connect to a higher dimension. Of course, I'm a spiritual coach, but to a, you know, something greater than us and our higher perspective of ourselves, whether that's soul or whatever, not necessarily in that order, but that everything we do is in a desire to connect. And as I've watched as a coach for 20 something years, things becoming more and more sped up and people becoming more and more disconnected and isolated. And the shootings and things and the violence doesn't surprise me because to me that's a side effect of the isolation. So how can we be a part of that solution? And again, it starts with us. How connected are we to ourselves? All of us, the ugly, messy, grieving is messy, the messy, you know, disjointed parts, as well as the joyful, lovely, lovely parts. So in the interest of time, I would like to hear, how has this been helpful to you today?
Mm. I just love this topic because it's about deepening. And I talk about this in my book. I have a beautiful quote about grief in my book. And it's just, it allows you to explore the parameters of your soul and really deepen with your clients. And, you know, let them have an experience of what holding space really is. Because a lot of people don't know how to hold it.
Yeah, well said. Thank you. Who else?
I really liked the piece about our culture and just really thinking through, you know, kind of how our culture looks at grief. That will help me be kind of more cognizant and help, again, look for those moments where I might sense that the client isn't accepting that that's normal.
Yeah. Thank you.
This is Donna. I like the normalizing grief for them, and if the length is whatever the length is, and you know, yes. I have friends that say, "Oh my gosh, I've been grieving my mother for 3 years now. Is that normal?" And it's normal because that's what you're doing, and
exactly.
You are. And I love the timeline. I'm going to go back and do that, the timeline with grief, and look at where I feel uncomfortable, because I think that comes out in the coaching somewhere.
Yeah. Mm. Well, if we had had more time, I would have done a timeline exercise with you, where I would have taken you on a little journey. And but yeah, just get out a piece of poster board and start at your birth and start writing all the loss, including positive loss, and then just into it where you're being called to tend to your grief. Anyone else?
This is Chris. If I might just add that we always hear about corporations and we're interested in soft skills, but we're not seeing that. It's more about hiding our grief or hiding our emotions, and grief is just one of many emotions that we tamper down when we're at work. And this really can help people to bring out and express what they're truly feeling so they connect with who they are as well.
Yes. Yeah, I like that. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anyone else?
Carol, for me, it's Arianna. I really liked what you said about grief doesn't need to be fixed. It's a lead. Very normal. But
yeah.
as a coach, you know, you want to help your clients move forward, but reinforcing is creating space and allow the natural time to take its natural and normal course. I think that's a very something that's resonating with me that
yeah.
Can be very important in my coaching.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
This is Sherry.
Go ahead,
sorry,
Sherry.
Carol.
No, go ahead.
Hey, hi. Hi, everybody. Carol, I so appreciate the study that you've undertaken. I so appreciate you bringing this subject, and I agree with what was said, but I was just going to add, for me, this is so resonating here at the end of the year when, especially as you've described our country, we, the sense of moving forward positively, this feels to me like we must name what we are grieving. We have to be able to do it, and it helps for me, it personally, and I know that means it will for my clients, that it feels like this path, you know, into the new year and into the future gets real and richer because of being able to first name what's not resolved and what's not been grieved. So thank you.
You're welcome. You know, and when we name it, a lot of the charge disappears, right? When we take something from behind us and we put it out in front of us, it, you know, a lot of the charge goes away, and ultimately it's our job to love those things rather than discount them or be afraid of them. They're parts of us. And so, you know, transmuting and transforming what we think is negative by tending to it and not being afraid of it anymore, it can be magical. So, yeah, I love that idea, going into the new year with a sense of love and focus and commitment to doing our own work and knowing that that alone will change the planet we live on.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else that want to share? Or
this is Heather. I was just going to say, I echo everything everybody has said. This has really been tremendous, Carol. Really, really excellent. The interesting juxtaposition of the positive grief and the, I guess, negative grief, for lack of a better word, but, you know, the positive things that happen in life can also create grief. That was an interesting dynamic to learn about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to thank Carol for this enlightening presentation and the thoughtfulness behind it, and also for creating a space where we all could contribute to the discussion and learn from each other, which is you know, the value that I hold for this whole team. So thank you so much, Carol. That was amazing. And if anyone would like to see a little bit more on grief, send an email to me, and that we have other topics to get to, but we'll try to come back to this. Maybe Carol would be lovely enough to grace us with
absolutely.
Some more.
That was the first thing I thought of when I looked at how yeah. much information I have and what little time we had. It's absolutely
yeah.
I'd be honored to,
but I,
to do
but I think
more.
this is going to help us all coach better in grief. I know it is for me.
Good.
So thank you
Good.
So much.
And I
want to move on because I want to honor the work that everybody did offline on closing the sale. And I wanted to make sure that we got to share some of that because I feel so honored that you did want to go off and work on work in triads on this for our work and for the work that you do in your coaching practices. And so I did want to share that we're still at about a 46% close rate on individually paying clients. I'm not tracking it on corporate yet because it's a little bit different monster, if you will. And I think that's excellent. And I want to congratulate us on that. And I want to have us continue to strive for more. And so I wanted to ask the representatives to share a bit about the triad. What did you learn? How did you improve? And how will you continue to support each other, if you will? It's not a requirement. It's just a curiosity that came up for me. So who would like to go first as a triad presenter?
I'll go, but I think we might have a couple people presenting from my triad. So
okay, that's fine.
Be just me. But we got together, Heather, myself, and Carol. We had a wonderful conversation and talked about closing, talked about consultations and our different processes around them. And one, so I'll go into what I learned and then I'll invite if anybody else from my group would like to share. But what I took on as something to work on is that strategy, closing strategy you had in your presentation around getting the client to say yes. So this was a very tactical piece I took on, a very specific. What I realized when practicing this skill is that it's really about checking in. That's what I learned from it anyway, that asking questions to get someone to say yes. First of all, you're asking a close-ended question, which is difficult when you've been trained to not ask a close-ended question. So this was, it created a lot more awareness and made my brain work a little bit in the middle of consultation. So checking in, but by asking this close-ended question, it allowed me to gauge how my client was doing through the consultation, what they were thinking. And if I didn't get a yes at the end of that question, that was an opportunity for me to explore further. There was an unresolved objection or something they didn't understand. So I asked, I'll give you a couple of examples of questions that I asked. One I quite like is, are you ready to find the answers to some of the questions you've been asking yourself now?
Mm.
So, and then simple questions like, have I answered all of your questions? Would you like to get started? So if these didn't result in yeses, then that was an opportunity. And for continued support, we actually, our triad decided, we've committed to each other for definitely the next 3 months to check in once a month over those 3 months to continue to support each other in these areas, but also in other areas, and to create accountability and talk about challenges and things like that. So that's what we've done.
Wonderful. That was excellent. Are other members of your team, Heather or Carol, do you want to add to that?
It's Heather. Sorry, I took myself off of mute. So just to add on, yeah, so each of the three of us had a focus area that we identified that we wanted to work on. My focus area was more on during a consult to share a story of coaching clients rather than talk about the coaching process.
Nice.
And I did have an opportunity to practice that with a client in my own work, but at least I did have the chance to practice that with somebody during our triad time. So.
Excellent. Yeah, stories are so powerful. Carol, did you want to add?
Not really. I committed to show up in support of Heather and Ariana because I'm not doing a lot of consultations right now. But I did make a commitment to get out there and start speaking again. And actually today was kind of, now that I think about it.
Yeah,
and I'm beginning to percolate on the possibility of creating maybe an ICF CCEU course on grief.
Nice. Yeah, so we vote for that.
But thank you.
We vote for that. Yay.
Okay, I appreciate that. I might need you guys to, you know, give me a nudge.
Hey, we'll nudge you.
Thank you.
Who else would like to share about their triad? I know we had a couple more triads.
I would like to apologize to my triad.
Okay.
Can I do that?
Yes.
Publicly? Yeah, this is Sherry. So I want to say, Donna, I totally, in every intellectual fiber of my being, appreciate what this opportunity. And it was at a time for me when I did not take advantage of it. And I did meet with Katie and Vicki once, but I hope they continued on. And I am sorry for that. And I plan to pick this up in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know how busy you've been. So
I just want to, yeah, thank you.
Anybody else, Katie or Vicki? I don't know if Vicki's on the call, but Katie, did you want to share anything?
I don't know. I think the big thing for me is, which I discovered on our sales call with all of us, was asking them, are you ready to sign up for 3 sessions a month? Versus, you know, what are you thinking? 2 or 3 times a month.
Bigger ask. Making the bigger ask. Love it. Love it. Matt, were you in a different triad and are you still here?
I think he's off.
Oh, he's off. Okay. And then Chris, are you still here?
Yes. I'm. Can you see me?
Oh. Yeah, when you talk, we can.
Oh, okay. Matt, Barry, and I were in the triad, and we will continue to support each other as we move forward into next year. We were talking about how sometimes you think you know the pain, and then you find out that you might have missed it a little bit at times. And so asking more clarifying questions and also in closing the sale, like Ariana had mentioned and others, asking a bigger ask when we're uncomfortable doing that.
Yeah.
And the idea that we can say, even though they mention, well, I have 1 or 2 other people to talk to, are you ready now? You know, have I answered all your questions? Are you ready now to sign up? If you are, we can go ahead. You don't have to talk to other people if you would prefer we work together.
Perfect. And if you're having discomfort around the bigger ask, I would suggest working with your coach or one of your peers and doing some coaching around that to dig deeper into it or to design an action around your learning style and do some drawing or some journaling or something to uncover what is it that's making you feel uncomfortable about the bigger ask. Because that will help you move through it. I had one client that what they did was they stood up, they had a line in front of them, and they just had to step over that line, and then that moved them into the comfort of the bigger ask. So there's all kinds of different ways to attack that, but fantastic. Any other comments? I think that might be all on the sales process. I just want to remind you that there are some notes here about the closing the sale mindset, to visualize them saying yes, begin with the end in mind, and so forth. I kept the closing questions in here because I thought that might be something to be reminded of. And then, let's see, wait, wanted to move to the get to know you activity. So I will start, and then I'll call on somebody, and then when you finish, call on the next person. And thank you so much for your hard work in the triads and your continued work in the triads. That makes us stronger as a team. That helps us serve more clients. We don't want those clients to go to another coaching organization, and in your individual practices as well. But the get to know you, let's have a little fun. I am Donna Schilder, Credential MCC, Coaching School, Coach U. My favorite non-coaching job was working on the television show That's Incredible many moons ago with John Davidson. And my proudest moment of coaching this year was when a CEO talked about the coaching we were doing to his team, and they said, yes, you have changed. So that was a proud moment. We helped him get down into the belief that was causing him to be a bit too aggressive. And the silliest thing I've done is dress up as Marilyn Monroe and sing happy birthday to my husband on his 50th birthday in Las Vegas.
Wow.
Pretty silly. So I'm going to call on Chris to.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. My name is Chris Sear. And I do apologize for being late, because I can say the silliest thing is I had us down at 12:30, not 12. That's why I'm an half hour late. Mm. My credential is PCC. I went to Coach U. My favorite non-coaching job, it was way back when I was just beginning to look at IT work. And I worked for the Department of Transportation in the city of Detroit. I was the admin for the director, and they asked me, because I was going to school, if I would like to put in an inventory system on the computer. Well, that turned into creating a whole computer department and getting it built and all those kinds of things using grant funds. That was the most fun I ever had, because it was so creative and I was going by the seat of my pants. My proudest coaching moment this year, I honestly can't, I really am not sure. I'm going to skip that one. There's been a number of different successes with coaching clients, but I couldn't tell you the proudest one I had. And of course, a silliest thing I've done is probably things that I'd rather not remember, so I'm not going to really share anything. Because you'll bring it up one day, and I will be very embarrassed.
Oh. We'll enjoy that, though. That's your assignment for next time, then.
I've already forgotten.
It's not surprising that you got confused about the 9 to the 9:30, because starting in January, we are going to start this call at 9:30 and go from 9:30 to 11. So I apologize for the confusion. I kept December the time that we had already assigned, and in January, we're starting at 9:30 to make sure we accommodate a couple more folks. And Chris, who do you call on next?
Katie.
Katie Smith, PCC, Advanced Corporate Coach U, favorite non-coaching job. When I got my course approved by the State Law Board of California, and I was taking, working with attorneys and partners, teaching them yoga and meditation, mindfulness in their work.
What was the proudest coaching moment of this year? Oh my God. Took me a while to think about this, but this definitely was the proudest. I'm coaching a peer group of 6 leaders, this very large company here in Colorado. And we've been working together for quite a while, probably almost 2 years now, I think. Anyway, they are in a highly dysfunctional culture, and the leaders are now coming to them and asking for them to really step up and lead. It's like they're shifting. Mm. It's so cool. And they are wanting to bring their subordinates into the peer group process. So what was so proud was that, oh my God, they're stepping into their leadership capacity. And they're able to shift the actual culture of where they're at, which is highly dysfunctional. So it's pretty cool.
Nice.
The silliest thing I've ever done. God, that's hard. I guess I haven't done enough silly things, which is not a good thing. That's where we have fun. That's where we have pleasure. This is all the use of life. I don't know the silliest thing. I think the silliest thing I've done, this was way back when. I need to do more silly things. I was trying to enroll someone in a personal foundation course, and I went up to his door and sang him this song. Probably, you know, I don't know. I got to think about that.
Love that.
That's
love
good.
That. That's a good one. Katie, who do you call on?
Ariana.
Okay. My name is Ariana, and I'm applying for my ACC, which is I'm long overdue. I went to Coach U for my training, and my favorite non-coaching job was corporate trainer for sales and business development, and having young impressionable minds to mold and anyway, have fun with. That was great. And my proudest moment this year, what came to me when I read this is something that actually happened just a few weeks ago. I got an email from a client I was working with, but helping a single mom who had major confidence issues and some mental health challenges land a great job and the job that she really, really wanted. So that was, I was thrilled for her and she was thrilled and it was great. So she had a lot of trouble seeing her own value and understanding that she was worth something to a potential employer. So anyway, so that's wonderful. In terms of silly, I'm right there with Katie. I feel like maybe I need to go to coaching for this because I feel like I don't do anything silly. And
oh my gosh, yeah, we have to totally incorporate that.
Yeah. So
yeah.
We might have to have silly hat day.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good idea.
I'll quickly share a story, something silly that happened to me on the weekend. Not intentional, but I was, my husband and I were away this weekend without the kids, which was nice. And we were staying at a resort along the coast, right on the ocean. And Sunday morning, the final morning of our stay, the waves were beautiful. They were just rolling in because we had had some weather and we were admiring them and we were down walking along the beach far away from the waves, but we turn our backs to take a selfie, turn our backs to the ocean, and this rogue wave comes up and completely washes over us, and we were soaked and we were in our winter boots and our winter parkas and our toques.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, so after a good laugh, a second selfie, but everybody in the restaurant along the beach.
Oh, saw you.
Cool.
I guess I will choose Heather.
Get myself off mute. Oh, right. My name's Heather. I have an ACC and I went to CTI. My most favorite non-coaching job, I just keep thinking about when I was little and I would work at my grandma's flower shop in a little tiny town. And we would go up on, we didn't live in town, but we would go there on holidays like Mother's Day and during the summer and so forth. And, you know, my little old 5-year-old, 7-year-old self would help customers and deliver flowers down the street and things like that. So my sister and I would do that. proudest coaching moment? You know, it's hard because you get, I'm sure like all of you, you get feedback from your clients and they say, oh, I couldn't have done this without you. And, you know, I guess it's more of an accomplishment, more less than it is a proud moment. But I have a particular organization that I started out with coaching one vice president there about a year and a half ago. And today I'm coaching five different people there, including the PCFO. So to have one client with five individuals at leadership levels that I'm coaching. So feels like a good amount.
Fantastic.
Silliest thing, I'm probably like many of you where I would like more silliness in my life. I do take improv classes periodically, which I love, and I highly, highly, highly recommend.
That's a good idea.
It is, excuse me, it is a shitload of fun. but just top of mind yesterday, I don't know that it's silly, but it's just more was a fun thing to do at church. We had a potluck after church. And various people volunteered to decorate the table, you know, the tables with a centerpiece and silverware and plates and all of that. Well, I decided I was not going to have a boring old Christmas centerpiece in the middle of my table. Instead, we had sugar cookies and frosting, and we decorated cookies instead.
Nice.
That's cool.
So I'd like to choose April. She's part of this game, I presume, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Miss April.
And you're on mute.
Oh, you're on mute. You're on mute. April, you need to unmute. Okay.
I think I'm good. I've been laughing this whole time. No one's heard me, I guess. My name is April Hunter. I don't have a coaching credential.
Sorry.
But MBA, and I've never been to coaching school. My favorite non-VA job? I don't know. I would have to say, and it wasn't even a paid job, but I liked volunteering at the pound. Oh. I love that job. But that was just volunteer work. So all my other jobs, I mean, I love my customer service positions, but I love animals. So if that was a job, that's one I would choose as my non-VA job. Mm. I don't have a proudest coaching moment.
Sorry about that.
And I don't have a proudest VA moment at this second. I can't think of one. What's the silliest thing I've done? Well, I have to tell you the truth. I'm silly all the time. Jerry and I make up our own languages. We talk like that in front of people. We're laughing constantly. So we're always silly. But I would have to say the silliest thing I've ever done, and this was going back, I'm going to say about 6 or 7 years. It was on New Year's Eve. I was just hanging out at home, me and someone, I don't remember who it was, just the two of us. Quiet night, dark outside, obviously, at midnight. I decided to go out on my deck naked and yell out Happy New Year. And it was kind of warm outside for that time of year. And I just stood there and enjoyed the breeze. It was kind of like, just felt so good. When I told my kids what I did, they were like, Mom, there's something wrong with you. Anybody could have been driving by the house. They said it was dark. My kids think I'm weird, so.
You're fun.
I don't care.
And I wanted to point out that you took the ethics class with Tina Elliott.
I did.
So April
That's
is actually
my proudest
jumping
VA
in.
Moment this year. Was taking an ethics course.
Yeah, so taking a 6-week yes. ethics course with Tina Elliott, the one that Katie and I met in. So yes. So you do have coach training.
I do have some. And working with coaches is actually, I've learned a lot. Mm-hmm. Outside of that training, I've learned a lot just by working with other coaches.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So. And my proudest moment is for you as a VA is you getting me to do all these technical things that I still stumble on, but at least I'm doing them.
You are, and you're doing a fantastic job.
I'm making me videos so I can figure out how to do stuff. So who do you pick?
Who's left?
Sherry and Matt.
Matt left, didn't he? Did Matt leave?
Oh, then I'll Matt might have left.
Then I'll pick Sherry.
Okay.
Okay. Sherry Cannon. My credential is a PCC from ADD Coaching Academy. My favorite non-coaching job. Two are tying for it. One was dipping ice cream at this family restaurant that I worked at when I was 16 in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I just loved it, and I got a lot of ice cream. And then teaching Seven Habits. You know, I had many years of facilitating Seven Habits of a Highly Effective People work with a lot of folks in tech, and it was just deeply meaningful. My proudest coaching moment this year, I think it's that I watched two women leader clients actually take up more space in their lives and in their work, you know, and become more of them. And I'm going to stay with that. That makes me proud. And I don't know what my silly thing is, but this is like a wacko thing that happened last year, like September, October. I started, there was a text thread running with one friend of mine, dear friend, and then we brought in a third friend. And then as the year progressed, we brought in a total of seven of us. And this thread, this text thread, is now a year and a half old, and it runs all the time. So someone is always talking. And the very special part of that for me is just that these are all women that I have loved from very different parts of my life. And I know all of you, you're drawn to coaching and counseling. All of you probably understand that sense you have when you just, there's not enough of you to be where you'd like to be, you know, and you have that sense of, I need to be on things and helping people and fixing. And I just have this joy now as 2017 ends of watching a group of my friends support and keep taking care of each other. And it's just become a place of tremendous honesty and, you know, kind of unconditional love. So it's a wacky thing that turned into a really awesome thing.
Lovely.
Very cool.
Did we get everybody?
No. Carol.
Carol. Carol. Oh, Carol.
Carol. I call on Carol.
Thanks. Carol Billingham, Master Certified Coach. Favorite non-coaching job. Back in my 20s and into my 30s, I worked for Sysco Food Services, and I sold supplies and food to restaurants, and I chose at that time to focus on fine dining because my profit margins were higher and I made more money. And I loved eating out, and it was fun to go and eat at my celebrity chef's restaurants and meet people like Julia Child and Robert Mondavi and make a ton of money. It was a lot of fun. Proudest coaching moment. I feel a little funny talking about it because it's very intimate, but I had a client that did a consultation with me and then did her first session. My understanding is she's an extremely private person and shared with me that she's gay. And my guess is that she hasn't shared that with very many people. And I was honored that we had created such intimacy so quickly. Silly. Well, my mom used to tell me all the time to stop being so silly. And I eventually listened to her.
Oh.
And but then, you know, I met Steve and April. It's kind of weird because what I was going to share is that Steve and I have these characters that we break into, and our favorite is Jean-Claude and Monique. And
yes.
and we are pompous and we are proud for being French. And if only everybody could be as wonderful as we are. yeah, so silly. Yeah, I
very cool.
Great.
Yeah. Silly.
Very.
May we.
I
may need to send you my cup then because I've got the Paris cup.
Oh, that's right. You do. Only if it is silly.
Only if it's silly. And I hope that we got everyone now. I think we did. I want to just, again, thank you all for all your hard work this year and continued work. And I want you to know I'm building additional capacity. We'll probably have two or three new coaches in the new year. I'm working through that and being very selective and working very hard to make sure they're the right coach. And thank you for all the referrals you've given. And I think this will be a yearly process. So always keep in mind any coach that you think might be a good fit, and we will keep them on the list until I go to recruiting again. Don't forget that we do all kinds of coaching. So if you do leadership coaching, remember that we do job search coaching, career coaching, small business coaching, sales coaching, life coaching, mentor coaching. So you can always refer a client into us, and we will take great care of them, as you can see by getting to meet all the lovely folks that we have on the team. But I just want to thank you for taking the time today out of your busy schedules, and want to wish you a happy holiday. And it was lovely. I learned a lot today, and I hope you did too. Say the ending code, but I will say it. It is 445. The ending code is 445.